Hello and welcome to Lush Learning. David Pearl is an innovator, creator, who works in business, arts and social change. A keynote speaker, a TED Talk veteran, he is the author of two best-selling books, the first on the art of meetings, Will There Be Donuts?, and Storytelling for Leaders, simply called Story. In 2012, he began walking in circles in public spaces, and nobody stopped to ask what he was doing. This fascinated him, and he set off on a series of experiments leading to setting up the global phenomenon which is now known as Street Wisdom. A non-profit venture, Street Wisdom transforms ordinary streets into extraordinary learning zones. I recently caught up with David in the busy streets of Covent Garden, where he taught me how to tune into my environment and share my experiences in order to help me move in a new direction, create new ideas, and overcome some personal challenges. So, hi, David.
Hey, Andrew.
Right, just tell us where we are, first of all.
We're in London's swinging West End. We're in, it's slightly pedestrianised, and the traffic is at a standstill.
And where have you brought me? What do we see?
What we see is a giant mausoleum of a building. We're near the Royal Opera House, which is over there, and we're at Drury Lane.
Okay, and the Prince of Wales pub on the corner, which we might go to.
Visit afterwards.
So why have you brought me here? What are we here to do?
I brought you out of buildings that you live in, into the street, Andrew, because I believe that there's a lot to be discovered in the street. I've got a non-profit that I run called Street Wisdom.
Okay.
And I just thought we should maybe play with some of the techniques of Street Wisdom to see what we can discover while we're out here.
And what are we going to learn then?
I think we're going to learn that there's inspiration available in very ordinary situations all the time when you know how to look for it. You know, I spent a lot of my time working in the creative industries, as you have, and also working in businesses, bringing creativity in. And I think it's time that we went out. People talk about getting out of the box. So get out of your box. Get out of those boxy buildings. Let's go out into the street where people live. And there's more answers to your questions than you could believe.
Okay, let's go.
Let's do it. Well, Andrew, we are wandering. We're wandering productively in a rather aimless way, but I think that's kind of important in these busy days. Some purposeful wandering. Well, it's something that I've explored in this non-profit that I set up called Street Wisdom.
So where did Street Wisdom come from? How did you invent it? Where did you find it?
So I think it found me, and I know it sounds a bit like an evasive question, but I've been thinking about this. I'm writing a book about the journey to here, and it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly, but a couple of milestone things did happen. One was I went through a period in probably my 30s doing a lot of development work. So yes, trees were hugged. And ashrams were visited and intentional communities stayed in. And on one of them, a place called Damana in Italy, I was sort of given a nudge by an oracle. And that's to say, imagine an enormous tarot situation, like a whole government department set up for you can give questions and it gives you answers. And I was talking about where next for me in life. And I got this nudge, which was, walk in circles in public places, but in Italian, because it was in Italy. And I was the recipient of this divine wisdom and did nothing with it, obviously, naturally. Cool. And an oracle talks to you. But years later, in fact, not far from where we're walking now, in Leicester Square, I started doing it. I was at a bit of a block in my life, and I started walking in circles in public places. It sounds like the definition of aimlessness, right? Walking in circles, but it was super interesting because I discovered numbers of things. One of them is that if you do something unusual in a public space, very few people notice. You're actually much more invisible than you realize. That makes, I think, the street a very potent place for experimentation. The second thing is, a lot of the fears that I had about what I would look like were my fears. So they're running around my head. And it made me realize that a lot of the social conventions we observe are imposed on us by us. So this was just simple from wandering around. The other thing I discovered was something that the flaneur movement, you know the flaneur movement.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're a bit of a flaneur yourself, mate. You
like
look very
flan.
Yeah. So the Fandom Movement, for those of our listeners who don't know, was a movement in the late 19th, early 20th century in Paris. Artists and poets would plunge into the crowd, disappear into the crowd, and wander the streets observing life. And, you know, hitherto the proper place for poets was forest glades, but they kind of brought that magic into the urban setting, or they saw it in the urban setting. And in a way, what Street Wisdom is doing, a similar thing, is take the most sort of humdrum, if you like, daily urban backdrop and find a way to contact their creativity and, if you like, the magic that's bubbling under the surface.
Yeah, okay, so most people don't wander aimlessly, do
yes.
they? Most people tend to rush from A to B as quickly as possible.
True.
Without really seeing anything,
yeah.
without noticing the building,
yeah.
certainly not engaging with any other person on the
yeah.
street. Is that something that you observe or noticed as you were sort of experimenting with Street Wisdom?
Yeah, I mean, the first person I noticed it, and it was me. Because as soon as you start to expand your awareness, you also start to notice how often you are, you know, asleep and completely, as you say, completely lost in your thoughts. That's funny, we're walking past the Royal Opera House, and when I was a kiddie, I used to sing here, oddly enough. By the way, that is something that happens a lot in Street Wisdom. You get these sort of, you're walking along and you suddenly realise that there are these happy accidents. There's
yeah.
a sign that it's particularly relevant to your conversation or whatever. We can talk a bit more about what's happening when that happens. But anyway, there we are. In the opera world, they have a phrase called snake eyes, which is when the lovers on stage are supposed to be gazing into each other's eyes. But if you look closely, their eyes are turned inwards, worrying about the high note that's coming up. And that, if you look around, in fact, there are a couple of people walking past us now.
Yeah.
And though their eyes are looking out, their thoughts are turned inwards.
Yeah.
And so a lot of this, yeah, and that's exacerbated perhaps by, you know, smartphones and so on and so forth. But this idea of sort of wandering in an unfocused way through hurrying in straight lines is, I think, definitely something you see all around you, right?
So do you think that people are losing something by not sort of experiencing that which is around them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a phone user, and I think you can get quite purist if you're not careful. So I think I'm interested in human beings as expanding our repertoire. So yeah, if you're going to use an iPhone, be skilled, use it well. But I think there is something that is being lost. It might sound a bit sort of highfalutin, but I think it's like a dimension of life that you can go through life without ever really connecting with, and people start to sort of look at you askance. I think what I mean is that think of Harry Potter. There's this famous, what is it called, platform 9 3/4 or whatever. The idea is that if you know how, you can penetrate the bricks and go somewhere special.
Yeah.
I think that is, well, I know that's possible on a normal street. I don't mean literally walk into walls, but there's a dimension that you can contact, a dimension that's full of ideas, full of stimulus, full of thoughts that you didn't know you had. That's right here on the streets if you know how to connect with it.
All right, so we're standing on A Street in Covent Garden.
Yes.
We're looking at the Royal Opera House in
yes.
one direction.
Yes.
And the other direction will take us down to the Old Rich, I believe.
Yes.
It's got some beautiful buildings on it, but what kind of things would I need to start doing to really connect with this street? What kind of, you call them tune-ups, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's appropriate. We're standing outside a musical institution, so the sort of things that you can do to tune up your senses, and it's really sort of to tune in a way. One thing I would do is first take a look, funnily enough, take a look at myself and ask myself what is attracting me and what is not attracting me, if you like. You know, if you're in a city, people are constantly trying to sell stuff to you, ideas, products. It's all about sort of exchange. And so at the moment, things are trying to flirt with us. They're all trying to, and some of them are working, some of them are not working. So I notice I'm intrigued by the crane, but I'm not wild about the green. I love the fluttering of that red flag over there.
Yeah.
I'm not so thrilled about the this red plastic barrier in front of me. So what I'm beginning to do is to notice that I'm evaluating everything that's around me, and also I'm noticing how much is around me. The second thing you might do to tune up is slow right down.
Okay, how does one do that? Literally
slow right down.
Slowly?
Yeah, I mean, actually, this body, that a lot of people think of the body as just a sort of kind of what keeps your brain off the pavement, keeps your head dry. But actually, the body is intelligent, highly intelligent, as we know. And if you slow it down, it'll slow your brain down. So there's different ways of doing it, but a really simple way is walk really slowly, turn your head really slowly, breathe slowly, blink slowly. And what begins to happen, two things happen very often for people, is that your thought, you become more aware of sounds and sensations, but also you're aware of the chattering voice in your head that says, don't slow down, you'll look odd, you know, hurry up, you've got things to do, exams to sit, money to make. And what it, slowing down often, for me, surfaces the little incessant fascist in my head that wants me to do everything at speed. So that's helpful. There's this, the word stranger is a charged word, right? Yeah. You know, stranger, I mean, it's got the word strange in it. And so there's this element of, I guess, fear or caution. No, don't talk to strangers. But I think, especially this time in our development and society's situation at the moment, actually really helpful not to be frightened of strangers. I mean, obviously be discriminating, but it's quite a fractured society we live in, and people are in their own little bubbles. Very helpful when you slow down, as you say, if people suddenly feel they're able to, well, make contact with Andrew. It might start out as a functional question like, where's the tube? But if your pace is, your tempo is a little bit slower, you might find that they slow down as well and you have a conversation.
And what about the third tune-up? In fact, we're on a quieter street now.
Yeah.
And is it the one about patterns? Is there a tune-up?
Yeah, about? A tune-up. One of the things the brain loves to do and does automatically is make connections. It makes meaning, right? It'll take two things that are completely unrelated, and they'll make meaning. So, for example, if I'm here, and if I say to you, we can both do this. If I say to you, for example, a word like enjoy the patterns, okay, and we look across at this building here, what's happening for me is I'm noticing there's a sort of trellis work, and I'm noticing how different that is to the olive tree that's in front of us. Then I'm seeing the olive tree and noticing there are two other hanging baskets, and I'm noticing that together they make a kind of sequence. I'm also, there's a pattern of sound. So, for example, it seems very quiet, like you said, but in the background over there, there's a kind of thrumming, like a bass note. Being a musician, there's a drill just started. So what, by asking, enjoying the patterns, or divinely discovering the patterns, see, suddenly there's a pattern of sound that's happening there. What it's beginning to do is make me feel that I'm more connected to the environment, it's more connected to me, it's a little bit more meaningful. It's not as random as we think. This brain's brilliant at finding meaning by connecting otherwise random things. And I would say, you know, some people would say that, well, hurry up, Andrew, get on and do your professional work and stop flirting with these strange ideas. And other people might say, you know, actually, what you're doing here is tuning into stuff that is going on. So, there are traditions talk about a genius loci, you know, the spirit of the place. And essentially, we're connecting with the spirit of the place, its history, its stories, its architecture, and so on. Now, in and of itself, how lovely, and that's sort of, you do that when you're on holiday, but you have that sort of traveler mentality. But what intrigued me was, how can we bring that traveler, that kind of out of space, out of time technology, and bolt it in, bring it into our working day and make it useful? So what we would do in Street Wisdom, and I know you know this, but you know, we might sort of, into this more connected state, you might drop a question. The professional Andrew Payne of today might be thinking, you just alluded to something, said, oh, my life isn't as ordered as this. And you might be thinking, you know what, I could do with a bit more order in my life. Mm-hmm. And if you had that question in your mind, and you look now back at the building, connecting with it, it might, if you like, have an answer for you. I mean, I'll do the same thing as well, because order is not my strong suit. But if I'm looking at this, and I let my mind make connections. So I'm seeing two things.
Okay.
I'm seeing a letterbox. And what the letterbox is saying to me is one way to create more order is to reduce the aperture of information coming into my life.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm plugged into a fire hose. And in those days, you use one letter at a time. The second thing I'm thinking, I think, it just immediately came to me, is there's a sort of, there's a combination here of stillness and movement. So there are bricks and stones, which are very ordered. And then there are these plants that are shivering in the wind. They seem very alive. And what that's saying to me, for what it's worth, is, David, order is a combination of things that are fixed and fuzzy. So you have to make sure your fundamentals in your business are fixed and strong, but also make sure that there's shivery, colourful, living things as well. What about for you?
Well, when you pointed in the general direction of that letterbox, I noticed the door knocker just above it.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, what I sometimes need to do is to be a little more assertive, perhaps, mm-hmm. in saying what it is I want from certain people, and not being afraid to come up with an idea or an unpopular suggestion. And so I need to perhaps be a little louder with my thoughts and ideas. And that sometimes means knocking on certain people's doors or engaging in conversation with people that perhaps don't want to hear that or I wouldn't normally go to. So that's coming through quite strongly.
And it's interesting to me that that happens. That happens so quickly as well.
Yeah.
And I noticed that because we have this facility, we can sometimes discount it and just put it to one side because it was easy. But I think what Street Wisdom's taught me is not necessarily to look for the answer,
no,
but to gather some options, yeah, so that you can make richer decisions, really.
So this is really interesting for me because we are literally just standing on a random street. We didn't plan to come here.
Mm.
And we've reflected on that question, which we didn't plan to answer.
Mm.
We didn't know that was going to be the question.
Mm.
And yet it's proven quite helpful.
Mm. Mm.
But a lot of people seem to think you have to go into a forest or walk along a beach or climb a mountain or have a guru or a life coach in order to get those kinds of insights, but you don't, do you?
No, I mean, I think I would add to that. I think people also feel they need to go into an office, sit in front of a computer and have a flip chart in order to do some work, and those are they're viable locations, but what we're missing in my view is the space between. What I love about where we're standing now, it's a place between somewhere and somewhere else.
Mm.
And it's sort of been, I think, overlooked as a rich place to learn. It's just, it's a street, I'm on my way to the place. So that's been my part of my exploration over the last, 10 or more years. You take business leaders out of their office, the first thing that happens is they lose their identity in the same way. For example, people aren't looking at them going, oh, hi, Brian, or hi, Jolene, or whatever. And sort of projecting a role onto them. I mean, the company that you work for is quite an egalitarian, easygoing company. You go in there and it feels very family-like, but there are leaders and they are senior people. And interesting, when you get out on the street, and I've done this with business leaders all over the world and organization leaders, is they sort of relish the anonymity of it. And what it does, I think, is it, apart from just connecting them to the customers, because that's where you are, it sort of frees up your thinking in a bizarre way. Right on your doorstep is a incredibly rich, inexhaustible supply of insight, and we're just not tuning in, which seems to me wasteful. The other thing is, if you're nice to the environment, it seems to be nice back to you. I mean, part of we are gazing, we're giving this house, which is lovely, our gaze.
Yes.
And we're giving it some attention, and I think I'd like to think it's giving us something back. People often ask, oh yeah, well, does this work in ugly places?
Mm.
And one of the tune-ups we didn't do, but we could do, is a practice where you see the beauty in everything.
Yeah.
And we've done Street Wisdom in some pretty quite rough places. I've done it in Ramallah, in the West Bank and stuff like that. Not that there's anything wrong with Ramallah, but it's you know, there's barbed wire and broken, you know, glass and so on and so forth. And there are lots of places that are quite, you know, corporate and quite arid. My experience has been, if you look and you slow down and you become aware, there's beauty everywhere. We're very visual age, very visual epoch, and you look and you judge and you move on. And it's partly, I think, a defense mechanism, because there's so much coming at you. You've got to be able to decide, what am I going to buy? What am I going to go for? And so on and so forth. But what I think you were talking about, we're talking about, is not just seeing, but sensing. So you sense the beauty in things. And beauty isn't just the way things look. I was, you know, talking before about the dimension that isn't revealed through sight immediately on the street, but you sense it, you can feel it, you begin to think about it, you begin to understand things differently, as probably slightly less busy ages would have done. And I think that's the point, that your judgments keep you efficient, they keep the speed up, they enable you to deal with lots of diverse inputs. But what we're doing for the purpose of street wisdom, to ask the question, as you said, in other words, once we're tuned up, what are we going to do with that? A lot of people, you know, are going to bliss out and sit and, you know, that's not the idea. The idea is take this heightened awareness and then put it to use. So we like, I'm sure you've heard me say this, you know, once we've done the tune-ups, we say, right, well, it's like we're logged in to the internet of things around us. Now let's go search. So then what happens is, and I think you alluded to it, is if you are open and aware and connected, and you drop into that awareness, a question, you bring an intentionality to it, and then the magic starts to happen. It seems that when you add intention, I'm going to ask a question or I'm going to discover something, it's amazing how the world seems to conspire with you to do that. People show up exactly the right time. I mean, there's endless examples of this. Until you've experienced it yourself, you might roll your eyes, but it is quite extraordinary how often people come back saying, you won't believe this, but I turned and I saw this sign, and the sign said this, and it's exactly what I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that is superstition or magic or happenstance, coincidence. I think there is, physicists would know better than I, but they say that, you know, when there's a system, if you add intentionality to a system, you change the system. It's quantum physics, I'm told. And I think that's sort of what we have at our disposal. The street outside our offices, outside our homes, outside our normal identities, is a system that's available for use if we know how to use it.
So do you, when you say that, because I'm quite musical, I think about tuning a radio.
Yeah.
In the olden days, analog.
The olden days.
So you'd get that little bit of white noise or that slightly disconnected voice. But if you tune into the street, it's like it comes into stereo immediately. Everything is clear.
Yeah, I think that's really nice. And I think fun, when you do it, you notice that the static's coming from inside your head, not from outside your head. Yeah. There is noise, and we screen that out. But actually, the mental chatter is what is probably insulating us from what's really going on. One of the reasons, you'll remember, sometimes we say to people, think of the word gratitude as you're looking. And this comes from in explorations of my own, including some quite, you know, we've all had our ups and downs, and I've had my fair share of downs, and there'd be some downs, and I've been really, you know, wandering the streets, you know, feeling pretty lousy. But one time, I won't tell the whole story now just because we probably don't have time, but I got a sense of, as miserable as I was feeling, if I suddenly imagined, what if I was dead and I had a minute to come back to the earth? Would I take it? And I thought, yeah, of course I would. And then I thought, well, what if I had to take it here on this street, you know, this grotty street or whatever it is? And I thought, yeah, I'd still take it. And then I thought, if I had a minute, I would find this place pretty special, pretty beautiful. I've had 60 seconds. I probably savor the smell of rotting cabbage. I probably enjoy the wind lashing on my face and whatever. And it really was a moment where I thought, you know, I think we probably only give ourselves the luxury of feeling miserable and grumpy because we think we're eternal. We think we'll live forever. And we don't realize that, you know, if you understood that this is the only time we can be on this street having this conversation right now. I think it, even when I say that now, it sort of raises your level of optimism and energy for it. It's like, here's where we are, let's do this.
Street wisdom seems to me to be an invitation, if you like, an invitation to go out and try something. And if it doesn't work, fine, try something else. Go back out there on the street again. So how do you find, or how have you found, people have taken street wisdom and inserted it into their home lives, social yeah. lives, back into business. Why does it work? How does it work?
It's a good question, because though I love the Street Wisdom event, that's not why we're doing it. The idea is not to do lots and lots of events. The idea of Precise, as you say, is to, I think, give people an experience of a facility that we all have so they can use it elsewhere. And I think the things that I find most encouraging is when people say, I do it between one meeting and another. As they're strolling down that corridor, they'll remember what it feels like to be in this charged kind of feel like quite a significant environment. And even though it isn't necessarily in the office space, it's a state that you can get into, which is curious, which is interested, which is appreciative. And that being able to do Street Wisdom in the internal street, in the corridor, is a really good thing. The other thing for me, because it feels like that is a very sustainable thing. You don't have to fly off to Burning Man to do that. You can do that between, you know, merchandising and the audit meeting. And I think the second place you see people using it is in lunch hours. It sounds obvious, but lunch hours have been squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. And there are companies I've seen where, you know, it seemed heroic to just have a sandwich by your screen and you work through. But actually, increasingly, people are with burnout and whatever that's happening. People are really encouraged to go out. And, you know, without anything else, without another faculty, people tend to go and either eat, no wrong with eating, or shop. What Street Wisdom, I think, gives people a chance to do is to be there and to, it's like reflect, reboot, restore yourself. It's like hitting the refresh button. And I think that makes me hugely happy. Also, people who are using on their commutes, use that space between being a mother, father, son, whatever it is you are at home, daughter, and whatever it is your role at work, and just enjoy that space in your commute, however much, if you are commuting, however much space there is, of just being whoever, you know, whoever you want to be open. We're complex beings, and we get stuck in our roles. It's a great opportunity to try and be somebody else.
So finally, if I wanted to go out and experience Street Wisdom,
yes,
how would I do that? How do I go about finding out more about you and
the thing? Well, there is, you'll be pleased to hear, a website, which is streetwisdom.org, www.streetwisdom.org. And there's two things I think you'll find there that will help. One would be, three things. One is you'll find where there are events on. You might find there's one near you. Hooray. Secondly, you'll find the instructions to run one for yourself. And it sounds like, how could I run one when I haven't done one? But that is designed to be done by non-professional facilitators, and we've put films and instructions on there to help people do that. The third way you could experience it, a nice, easy way, these are all free, by the way, is to download this. There's an audio guide. You stick it on the very same smartphone you're maybe listening to this podcast on. And it's a kind of guided walk where I take you through the steps, a bit like, you know, we've done some of them as we've been talking today. But that's a way of sort of running your own Street Wisdom for yourself in your own time, and people seem to really like that.
Anything to add?
I haven't, but maybe if we wander, who knows, the street may throw us something. The nice thing is, when you're wandering, you don't have to have thoughts, just we have to notice what's happening around us. Come, let's wander
on. Let us wander on.
Have a wonderful time.
For further information on David, go to davidpearl.net or streetwisdom.org.